I know now how it feels when you think that it feels like all is lost, or you will never be able to do certain things again. You will never be able to enjoy stuff again. You will never be yourself again. I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. And I know that there is a way out that you can try. And I think it will work for almost anyone.
Welcome to the Midlife Reinvention Podcast, a podcast helping women in career and life transitions achieve clarity on their next steps so they can transform uncertainty into an energizing next chapter. I'm your host, Kavita Ahuja, and the founder of It's My Time Now Coaching. If you're wondering what's next in your career or life, you are in the right place. Through solo and guest episodes, you'll gain practical tips, tools, and inspiration to help you uncover blocks, gain confidence, and be, do, and have what you want. I rediscovered myself after the age of 50, and I know you can too. It's my time now to help you do just that. I'm so excited you're here. Let's dive in. Welcome to another episode of the Midlife Reinvention Podcast. It's hard to believe we are into mid-April. This year has already gone by so fast, and I hope you are enjoying your 2024 so far. It's around this time of the year that we can tend to get a little disappointed if the plans that we had made in the beginning of the year may not have quite materialized the way we had hoped. I want to remind you to not worry too much about all the big steps ahead, but also think about how far you have come. If you do that, that will put you in a gain mindset. You are exactly where you're meant to be, so celebrate that and be happy for how far you have come. In this week's episode, you will be inspired by an incredible story of resilience and reinvention. Learn how Kim Rahir, a mother of three, was diagnosed with MS, but defied the odds to become a European champion in Masters weightlifting. Discover how her experience led her to transition from journalism to becoming a health coach for middle-aged women, and how she's focused on reactivating muscle and nourishing the body. In this episode, you will learn, number one, how the power of resilience and the transformative impact of mindset can help you overcome life's challenges. Number two, practical tips on building physical strength and resilience tailored specifically for midlife women. And three, a refreshing perspective on healthy eating habits and how to set achievable goals for long-term wellness. Don't forget to stay till the end, where I share our Motivational Monday segment on another incredible example of a woman who defied health odds to not only survive, but thrive. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you at the end with the key takeaways. Welcome to the Midlife Reinvention Podcast, a podcast helping women in career life transitions achieve clarity on their next steps, so they can transform uncertainty into an energizing next chapter. I'm your host, Kavita Ahuja, and today you are in for a real treat, as you will be amazed and inspired by a rather unbelievable story of resilience and power. My guest today is Kim Rahir. Kim is a 60-year-old mother of three who was diagnosed with MS 10 years ago, and decided to ignore her doctor's advice and muscle her way back to a happy life. Last year, Kim became the European champion in Masters weightlifting in her age and weight category. Unbelievable. Her journey inspired her to leave her career in journalism in her 50s and become a health coach for middle-aged women, with a big focus on reactivating and rebuilding muscle. Today, she helps women tap into an abundant source of vitality and she helps them reactivate and maintain muscle and eat to nourish their re-energized body. So welcome to the show, Kim. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for the work that you do also to, you know, help women reinvent themselves. It's amazing.
Yeah. So thank you. Yeah, I think we're all trying our best to help people along on this journey called life, right? So that's why I really love to interview women who, like yourself, who have such an incredible story of resilience and reinvention. So I'd love to get right into it. So I alluded to it a little bit, but if you could just tell us the story of how you went from a journalist with a really busy life, 3 kids, and one day ending up in the hospital being diagnosed with MS. And tell us what happened that day and how did that experience kind of redefine, I'd say, your identity?
Yeah, of course. It was really, just as I tell it, it was very sudden. I had had some kind of viral infection, which felt like a normal cold or something. I was feeling better again. And I was picking up my kids from school, driving, and I realized that I was seeing double, which was like really scary.
That's scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Went to see a doctor right away that evening. They sent me to the hospital, tons of tests. I ended up spending 6 weeks in hospital. And over the course of the first 3 weeks, I was losing the use of my legs. I was mostly losing the sensitivity, but it meant that I didn't get any feedback from my legs. And after 3 weeks, I couldn't even wiggle a toe.
And oh my goodness. Wow.
I think the predominant emotion at that point in time was fear, anxiety, uncertainty, not knowing, because they weren't very clear on what was happening. They knew it was autoimmune, but since I had symptoms that were like all over the place and didn't fit this box completely and the other box either completely, so they couldn't make up their minds. They actually gave me like the final diagnosis when I had left hospital and said, this must have been, and that was my first bout with autoimmune disease, because that still was something that they call a syndrome Guillain-Barré, which is a one-off. So I was told that, I needed a bit of treatment for about a year. But after a year, I would be fine. And I learned to walk again. And I was very grateful for being able to walk again. And then a year later, when I thought I was cured and would never have to deal with this kind of experience again, I felt my left hand going numb. I knew that was not a good sign. More tests. And that time they said it was an attack of my immune system on the white matter in the nerve cells. And that if it happened again, this would be declared a case of MS. And I waited for a year hoping that it wouldn't come back, but it did come back. It was a very, very mild relapse. And I only noticed it because I was doing weird yoga pose on the bedroom floor. I had tingling in my spine. Back to the doctors, and then it was officially MS. And that was, you know, after having been sort of cleared and then getting struck down again, it's incredibly
devastating. Yeah.
It's incredibly hard. And it's interesting that the first time it was just fear, oh my God, what's happening? Then I sort of got out of that. I felt better, was grateful. It changed my life, my perspective, everything. The second time, I think it was more of like disappointment. Mm. This idea that you have a plan for your life. You have an idea of how you want it to go. It doesn't go the way you want it to go. You have to accept that. You get through this. You make a new plan and you are already sort of grateful and flexible, and you know that you're not in charge and that things can happen. That new flexible, more open and more forgiving plan gets sort of brushed off the table. Again, I was disappointed and I was also scared, of course, because MS, you really don't know where it leads you. You could go blind. You could be paralyzed.
Yes, yes.
Anything can happen.
Right, right. So it's interesting when you describe that, the differing emotions that happened when you were first diagnosed. Well, firstly, the fear, anxiety, uncertainty, and then the gratefulness, and then disappointment again. So it's, as we go through life, we experience all these different emotions. And So tell me what happened. I mean, tell us what happened after that. So I know that you said it kind of redefined your identity, but you also said
when we talked earlier that you kind of muscled your way out of the illness. Firstly, how does even one, even after getting through it and then being diagnosed again and then having all those feelings, how does one even have the courage or the strength to muscle your way out of this illness? And tell me, what does that mean?
it's a great question. The first thing that I want to tell you is that when the doctor said, this is MS and you will need to take lifelong treatment, and he was just like sort of prescribing the drug and wanted to send me on my way. And I went, hang on 1 minute. What? Lifelong treatment? I was not going to take that without asking questions. And he was not used to that. And I fought with him for an hour. And I said, what if I'm getting better already? My second relapse, it was so mild. It was hardly anything. If I hadn't been sort of attentive, I would not even have noticed. If I take this treatment, I will never know if I'm getting better or if I'm just okay because of the treatment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will also depend on this thing forever. Why, really? And he was not used to someone asking so many questions.
He was for him.
Patient for a while. After an hour or so, he got a bit impatient and I just had to give in and say, okay, I'm going to do this. And I asked him if I could exercise because I had this desire to be in charge of my body again. An autoimmune disease, it feels also like a betrayal because your body is turning against you, against itself.
And I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. And you feel so out of control. And I wanted to get some kind of control back. I don't think it was like that verbalized in my mind at the time. It's just I felt that I needed to do something and I felt that I wanted to be strong. So I asked him, the doctor, can I exercise? And he said, yeah, but you better be careful. And that was all he said. And to this day, I don't think he was doing right by me because he should have either said, I don't know enough about MS and exercise to give you expert advice.
Right.
So maybe talk to someone else. Or he should have said, do whatever you feel able to do. Something that would have been empowering. What he did was like sort of take himself out of the equation. I don't really want to say anything. He probably knew that he couldn't say exercise isn't good for you, but he wasn't sure in how exercise might help me. He had no idea. So he left me with that thing all alone. I was lucky because I had an appointment with a nurse who showed me how to inject myself with that medication. And she said, exercise is great. It makes your body fatigue resistant. So you train, body gets fatigued, and it comes back stronger. And she said, fatigue is a big problem with MS patients. So exercise is good. And that was my green light. And I got it from a nurse.
From a nurse, yeah.
Not from a doctor.
Yes.
So I armed myself with a book. It was one of the first books. I think it was written at the end of the 90s. It was one of the first that said women should lift heavy. And I started lifting. And I felt better so soon, because after you have a relapse, you get treated with I don't know how you call this in English, with corticoids or steroids or something like this.
Yeah, corticosteroids, yes.
And they make you feel pretty, it made me feel pretty kind of like dizzy and weak. So, you know, you're not totally yourself.
Yes.
But I decided I was going to go to the gym and I started lifting. Of course, I didn't start with tons and tons of weight, but I knew my goal was to lift heavy. And my goal was also to build myself back up. And that was the first time I'd been an exerciser before, but it was the first time I came with that intention, that clear purpose, build myself back up, not to kind of stay in shape or kind of control my weight or maybe change the way I looked or anything. I just wanted to become strong again. And it makes a huge difference when you train with that kind of purpose. And
yes,
I felt better and stronger within a matter of weeks. Just
really?
Weeks. Yes.
No.
That's how fast this can go. And then with my checkups and everything, they became a formality because I was doing so great. I was still.
What did the doctor say?
They said, wow, you look good.
Did he say, oh, okay, well, that's your size is good.
No, because we moved. We left.
Oh, right.
We left the country, not because of the doctor.
Okay.
We moved to Spain. I found myself. There's always like small sort of coincidences in life. I don't even know if they're coincidences. I just Googled to find myself a neurologist, and I found the number one guy in Spain for MS who knows all the latest research, who's very much into it, who really works just with that. And I was really just Googling, looking at, you know, hospitals and where I could go. And I found that.
Yes. Wonderful.
And he was totally surprised when he saw me and said that was quite untypical for MS patients to be in the shape I'm in. There was also like little things, reflexes that I had lost during the relapses. And I had been told that's never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it all came back. I was really like in fighting shape. And so after three years of injecting myself, which is very unpleasant because it takes a toll on the skin at the injection sites, and it gave me flu-like symptoms. Some people get that from this treatment, which is interferon beta. So every day I injected myself, I had like a headache and I felt heavy and tired. And I just took over-the-counter medication to deal with that. I didn't want to stay at home and feel sorry for myself and be miserable.
Mm-hmm.
But after 3 years of that, I went to see that Spanish neurologist and I said, listen, we're going on a camping trip in Canada. It's a long flight. The medication has to be refrigerated. You have to really fight with the flight attendants to put that in the fridge for you because they don't have any space and they can't accommodate every passenger like that.
Yes.
And then camping and sort of injections. I thought it's not really feels like cumbersome. Can I suspend the treatment for 3 weeks? Would that be a problem? And he said, you can stop the treatment for good and give that a try if you want to. And I couldn't believe my ears. He said, if you want to keep going, I'll be supporting you. But if you want to stop, I'll be supporting you too. He said, hell yes, I want to stop. I never wanted this in the first place. And then he said something that I'll always be grateful for. He said, we are actually not 100% sure at this point in time if this treatment is effective in preventing MS relapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that was very brave of him
honest,
to say that.
Honest, yes, and brave.
Because I think it still gets prescribed, this treatment.
Yes.
And he could have also have said, you know, like nothing, fearing that I might think I'd been given the wrong thing or whatever. And he was just honest. And I really respect him for that. And it gave me lots of hope. Because if there was a chance that this treatment wasn't really effective, then that could mean if I had been without any relapse for 3 years, that it wasn't because of the treatment, but because of me getting better.
Yes.
So that gave me the courage to say, yes, let's stop this. And that was 6.5 years ago, and I've been without treatment and without any relapse since.
Wow. Congratulations. That's amazing.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing. It's so inspiring. That's really why I wanted to listen to your story and have people hear that. I wouldn't say that it's like everybody should get off medication, but I just think that the purpose behind what you did is so important. And I love when you said that it felt like your body betrayed you. And I never really thought of that as an audit. It's like your body's attacking you. And so the impetus for you is really to build yourself back up. And that's what you did with muscling your way out of the illness. And that just takes so much courage, I would say. And I think also, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it took a lot of internal belief that you can do this.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
I think there was like a transition because when I started, looking back now, it looks a lot like I was a little bit in denial.
Yes.
I wanted to make myself believe that I was okay and that I could do anything. And that I could live a normal life. I wanted to ignore that I was a patient of something, a condition. I also, when we moved to Spain, I joined a gym and I kept training and everything. I told nobody that I had MS. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to wear that label.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, I sort of, it's like making peace with your body, making peace with what's going on. I didn't have to deny that I had this disease because I was more and more empowered to think that I could deal with it and that I could live with it and that I could actually be not 100% in control of my body, but that I could do things and that I could that have an influence and yes. have an impact with the things that I
do. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's really important what you said. I'm not claiming that you can heal MS or stop your medication by training, but I'm very confident that it's what got me out of that
yes.
place.
Absolutely. I also firmly believe in the power of the positive. When you're doing something positive, that's creating the positive energy in your body and in your mind, and that positive influence and mindset, that in itself, will heal. Like, rather than sitting at home and worried about it and constantly thinking about it, that creates negative energy, right? So I really believe that that's part of my belief anyway. And I don't know what you think, but I also wanted to ask you, like, so after you, now you're 6.5 years without treatment medication. So how did this experience lead to your desire to share this knowledge with other women? And what would you say, especially for women in midlife, like we are, how is muscle and creating strength in your body related to overall health, especially as women in midlife? How does that relate?
Hi, my friend, Kavita here. Do you often feel blocked from moving forward? We all feel that way at times. These are referred to as energy blocks. I've created a short, actionable PDF guide to help you release your negative energy blocks. Click the link in the description to download it now for free. Now, let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, it's something that I think is so powerful, and that's made me reinvent myself and stop my. I gave up my journalism. I wanted to sort of share this message that you can get so much better. And just briefly, what you said about the mindset part of it, I think
yes.
that might be the biggest factor actually in my yes. in my comeback and in my healing. I think we're only learning now how everything is so intertwined, and what you do with your brain and with your mind has a direct effect on your body and the other way around.
Yes.
And I felt, because what happened to me, I felt that I was on to something. And I had also changed as a person because I have become much more understanding and forgiving. I was raised a little bit in this spirit is what doesn't kill us will make us stronger. And some people were complaining about stuff. I treated myself that way too. It was like, come on, suck it up and pull yourself together.
Right.
And because I had been in that situation where I was really just, when I was in hospital, I was just a pile of misery. So I know now how it feels when you think that it feels like all is lost, or you will never be able to do certain things again. You will never be able to enjoy stuff again. You will never be yourself again. I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. And I know that there is a way out that you can try. And I think it will work for almost anyone. Getting physically strong will change so many things about your body. And science has caught up with that in a big way. We know so much now about muscle. First of all, of course, it's very important for functional independence. For people think when they hear muscle, they think maybe Schwarzenegger or bulging biceps or something. I think getting out of a chair without pushing with your arms. I think opening a pickle jar. I think rolling on the floor with your grandkids or something. This is what you need muscle for.
Yeah.
And if you do not conserve your muscle mass, because we lose muscle, especially as women, from our 30s onwards, we lose like, I find something like 8% every decade, which is, it's enormous. So we need to conserve that to stay functionally independent. Mm-hmm. It's also crucial for metabolic health because muscle helps your body manage blood sugar. Mm-hmm. And I speak to a lot of women in midlife who have had like this first warning shot across the bar where it says, the doctor says you're pre-diabetic, you're insulin resistant. And it feels like, oh my God, this comes from out of the blue. This thing drops on me. What can I do? Build muscle. If you start training, building muscle, your pre-diabetes and insulin resistant will be managed like really easily. We also know that muscle is great for cardiovascular health, which is absolutely amazing.
Yes.
Because that's, if I'm not totally mistaken, and I don't think I am, I think that's the number one killer of women at this point in time.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes. Yes. Heart attacks and strokes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So muscle it's interesting. Help with that too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I completely, it's funny because my son is like, he's very much into, but not bodybuilding. He's very strong. And he tells me, he says, Mom, you have to lift weights and push yourself to lift heavier. And when I do that, just like you described, it just feels initially it hurts. It's like a sore, but then that soreness just, you just feel stronger. And I really believe that the structural and functional independence is so important, as well as mobility to do everyday things. It's not, like you said, it's not necessarily you're going to be, you're going to be just toned and feel better. And yes, like you said, you know, it does help with regulating your insulin levels and all of that. So I think it's a really important message that I don't think a lot of women actually understand the importance of it, but even menopause symptoms, right? I mean, those symptoms that we go through, it's the lethargy, the tiredness, all of that, the mood swings, all of that can help. So practically, how can women how can you start building muscle without getting hurt? And I know I see that because I see women who have been to classes, like fitness classes, where I just see it and I just cringe because they don't do the right form, right? And then but they just get hurt or they get injured and it's like, oh, well, whatever. So maybe you can give it a little bit of tips on that.
That's crucial, especially for midlife women. It's so important.
Yeah.
You want to start where you are at. And then there's this thing, and I hear this when I talk to women, I hear this all the time. They even call it like a disconnect because they still feel as though their body could do things that it could do 20 years ago. They feel tired, they feel heavy, they feel lethargic, they feel low, but they imagine that if they just go to the gym and do stuff, then they're going to get better. And sometimes when they really get motivated and say, I'm going to start training today, they go to the gym and they move their body as if it was the same that it was 20 years ago. It isn't. We are not who we used to be. So you need to find out what is your physical status right now. And you have to be very honest with that. Best thing is to find someone who can have a look at you, at your strength, at your mobility. And that's where you start. And most women, if you have been sedentary for a long time, you actually need to sort of reconnect your brain with your muscle. I mean, the connection is always there. But it might not be very functional because if you haven't done anything, if you haven't moved a lot over the decades, and this is also important, if you haven't, it doesn't make you a lazy or a bad person. You just had other priorities or had a life to live, things to do. But if you haven't exercised in a long time, the connection between your brain and your muscles is probably kind of offline. And you need to wake that up with very gentle activation exercises. It doesn't take long. Because the connection is there. It's just waiting to rise again and to be functional again. That's how you want to start. And when I work with women, most of them, they don't want to go to the gym. They don't feel at home there. And I totally understand. I start with exercises at home and I make it 15 minutes a day, not more. Because first of all, we want this reactivation to be gentle, and we also want to acknowledge that this is a change of lifestyle that can create some resistance in your mind. Even if you have the best of intentions and you say, I want to do this now, when it comes to really executing that behavior, it must be as simple and as easy as possible, especially when you start. So don't go out and think, I'm going to go to the gym three times a week and lift for an hour. I'm going to get so strong and I'm going to be just fine. Because if you haven't done that for a long time, just imagine you have to pack your bag, you have to get in your car, you have to drive through traffic, you have to find a
place. Yeah, there's all this resistance that could come in. It's like, oh, I don't know.
You're going to do that
once, excuses.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's and it's totally normal and it's human because our brain hates change. It doesn't want that change. So I make that change as small as possible.
Yes.
15
baby steps. Yeah, baby steps.
Absolutely.
I think we might have met for, like, I don't know why we met. It's just like weird, like what you just said, because I have had a bit of an injury in my knee and my back. And I think it was because I did that. I went to the gym and I was all excited and I injured that, right? So again, back to my son, he says, okay, I'm going to give you this program. So it's 15 minutes of mobility exercises and then 15 minutes of weights, like, you know, not over the top. And that's what he told me. And I'm like, that's not enough. I said, how is that going to help me? Like, I'm so used to doing hour classes. And he goes, oh, just do it. Just do this. And so it's completely aligned with what you're saying. So I wanted to share that. It was like, okay. So it's true. You have, like, I love what you said, is that reconnect with your body and start where you are at. So I think those are the key takeaways from that, like, in terms of starting. And I'm sure you have a program that can help women with that. So that's fantastic. So Kim, I know we talk about the physical and then we kind of talk a little bit about the mindset, but talk to me a little bit about what you think is the meaning behind resilience. I know you have to be very resilient in your life, not only like physically, but I know that you've also reinvented your career from journalism to health coach. So what is resilience? And, you know, what is the common kind of theme between these different reinventions that you've kind of had to make in your life?
Yeah, I have a little bit outside the box idea of this, because we tend to think that these like qualities like resilience or willpower or discipline are like character traits, like part of our personality. We think, and I hear this, I just have no discipline. I'm not resilient enough. And like it's something that sort of is stuck to your soul, to your character.
Identity. Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's nothing that you can do about it. I think resilience is more like a safety net, actually. I came up with this image, but when I talk to so many women, I'm not exaggerating, who tell me this. A few years ago, I worked with a personal trainer. I saw them 3 times a week. I was in the best shape of my life. I was eating right. I was losing weight. I felt super fit. I felt fantastic. And then they moved away, or maybe then they stopped working, or then they couldn't work with me anymore, and it all fell apart. And I thought,
wow.
How can you sort of have your whole health system rely on one single source of support?
Yes.
You can't be resilient. If that breaks away, you're in free fall. There's no way you're going to get back up. So I think resilience is a safety net that you knit for yourself, where you have various points of support. And then when one breaks away, you still have all the other knots that will help you sort of bounce back, and you will stand up again and keep going. And it's something that you want to have in mind all the time. Don't just train with one person if you go to a gym. Have some friends that you can train with. Have a system for how you eat. Have things in place where you go for walks regularly. Stuff that all kinds of sort of support systems that you have in place for your health that you know will help you and that will keep you going. And then when one of them, like you could get injured, for example, say you injure your shoulder. And if you have just this one training routine or this training habit where you go to the gym and you do a certain amount of exercises and then you hurt your shoulder and you're going to say, okay, I can't go to the gym. What do I do? Mm-hmm. But if you have other classes that you go to, if you have a regular walking habit, these are all these things that you can keep doing while your shoulder heals and you don't fall all the way through. You get sort of caught by that safety net and then you bounce back up and don't rely on just, this is really something I want everyone to understand. Don't rely on just one support in your health system. you know, have various points that you can fall back on.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much. I love the analogy. Resilience is a safety net, and you knit it for yourself where you have various sources of support. I love that. I love that kind of twist on the meaning behind that. Thanks for sharing that. When I think about that, I'm going to think, okay, well, what am I relying only on one person, or am I expanding my support? Because that's exactly what we need to do as women, especially. Like, you can't just give up if one thing in your body is going to like give up, like your shoulder, your
knee.
Things
are going to happen.
Like, that's, things are going to happen. So you can't let everything else go by the wayside. So that's a great example.
I think it's also very important to, and this is difficult because it's so in our culture, to understand that most of the things that we think are characteristics of us or part of our identity are linked to just skills. And if we think it's our identity, then we have to struggle with shame and guilt, and it's just me, and there's something wrong with me, and I just can't do this. Whereas when you think of most of these things as skills, you know, you can work on them. You can get better. Mm-hmm. You can get better at self-control if you know how mm-hmm. to work on it. You can get better at all these things. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with you. You just don't have that particular skill. And mm-hmm. that's it. And I think that's a relief. That's so liberating, because truly many, many women in midlife think that there's something wrong with them, and that there's nothing anyone can do. And that's just not the case.
That's, you know, thoughts become things, right? So if you think that, then that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And just on that as well, like when you are training with women and when you're advising them, so along with exercises, obviously eating right and nourishing your body. And why is, I think you mentioned that, why is trying to eat healthy the worst strategy that women or people can use to drop the fat and the weight?
Yeah, this is one. It's a bit of a provocative statement, but I really stand by it, because it's also if I had a penny for every time I heard this sentence, I'm just trying to eat healthy. I might even be in the Bahamas or not. I don't know. I've heard it many, many times. And
yes.
the first thing you need to see is trying is not a valid goal. If that's your goal, if that's your health goal, I'm going to try something. That's just dreaming, and it's never going to happen. You need to do something, and you can make it super small, as we said. But instead mm-hmm. of saying I'm trying to eat healthy, you can say I am going to eat 3 varieties of vegetables every single day. That's a goal. Mm-hmm. That's reasonable, and that's doable. I'm trying is like you declare defeat in advance, because, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sort of trying, but I don't know. What am I going to do? And then eat healthy. It's just too vague. It's so vague.
What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. And,
yes.
And I think, because it could mean, it depends. If you have IBS or if you have celiac disease or whatever, healthy means one thing for one person and another thing for another person. There's no healthy eating system that works for everyone. And also in midlife, as I said, we are not who we used to be. If we want to get lean and strong, we have to be specific as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Anything vague will not get us where we want to be. And that's also why so many women struggle, because they're sort of trying to do the right thing. They're not laser focused on what they actually need to do to get certain specific results. So you want to be very clear on your goal, and then you want to do what it takes to get there. What is the most effective, the most bang for your buck approach to get to that goal?
Yes.
And I also think that I'm just trying to eat healthy is a way of, you don't really want to change. And it's okay. Change is scary. Our brain hates change. And you say, I'm just trying to eat healthy, is like, I'm kind of doing the same thing as before, but I'm swapping a few things. Instead of eating a bag of chips, I'm going to eat a bag of almonds, which is probably less harmful, but it doesn't change your basic approach to food. Because if you're eating that bag of chips or that bag of almonds because you need food for comfort, and it's your only source of comfort, and you just keep doing that just with a different kind of food, that's a surface level sort of intervention. You know, you're not really tackling the basic problem. So you want to be really specific.
Yes.
You need to be open to some meaningful change. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Yes. Yes, what I completely agree with, what I get from that is really create your own definition of what does healthy mean for you, because it's not the same for everyone. So if healthy, like you said, if somebody has celiac disease or whatever, what does going healthy mean to you? It's not and be more specific and clear on what your goals are. So I really love that. That's fantastic. So Kim, women who are listening to this podcast are primarily women who are kind of going through transitions in their life or thinking about their next steps or wondering, what do I do next? And so from your experience in your changing careers, not only changing careers, but also transforming your life, what would you say, what have you learned? What is the common theme? Or what would you advise women who are going through these kind of reinventions? And from your experience, what would you advise them at this point to really look forward to? Or what is your lesson that you maybe like to impart?
I think at this point in our life, the biggest favor we can do ourselves, and this is going to sound crazy, but I think the biggest favor we can do ourselves is to let go of the big picture. It's often said that you need to see the big picture and put things into perspective, and it's fine. But in the process of reinventing yourself, which is like a crisis, right? Because it's a moment of change. It's a moment of decision, of letting go of stuff and then choosing other stuff. And if you look too far ahead, you're going to be scared. You're going to be scared so much if you see all the road that you still have to travel with this reinvention. Just, you're starting something completely new. If you look at where you're at and all the way you have to go, how high that mountain is, it's going to be so scary. It's going to sort of slow you down and maybe even paralyze you. And it's something that helped me also in my darkest hours when I was thinking, oh my God, what's going to become of me? I just let go of that big picture and focused on today, what I can do today.
Mm-hmm.
And take a small step into the direction that I want to go, to do something small. Always focus on what you can do right now. Don't look so far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're told to be strategic and think about future you, what's it going to save or what you do today. But I think at this point in our life, because we know we're like sort of the half of our life is sort of behind us.
Yes.
No. So if we look ahead and think, oh my God, in 30 years, am I even going to be able to do what I want to do now? And don't go there.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Yeah.
Focus on today and do something, because that will make you feel good right away. And that will give you momentum to keep going.
Yes. I love that, because it's so true. Because when you're looking, when you make these big plans, and you not only get overwhelmed, but then you also then you're not happy with the current state you're in, right? You're not appreciative of where you are now.
Yes.
Because if you're appreciative of where you are now and you take the small steps to just get better day by day, I'm not saying don't have that vision. I think the vision is important of where you want to be. And that kind of leads you, that kind of guides you. But I love that, because that's what I tell my clients is that don't get overwhelmed. Don't get overwhelmed with all the things that you need to do. Just appreciate where you are now, that you've gotten here, and you have done a lot. And as women in midlife, we have done a lot. Appreciate what you've done. Appreciate who you are. You're unique, and just enjoy the moment, I guess would be the thing.
Absolutely.
So those are some great tips. I really, it's gotten me encouraged, and I feel like I'm going to go work out now. So
yes. Amazing.
Yes. So tell us, Kim, about, you have a fabulous In 15 program, and I really am thinking of checking it out myself. So tell us about it and what you teach and all the good things.
Yeah, it's an approach where you just have to dedicate 15 minutes a day to exercise that you can do in the comfort of your home. You can even do it in your pajamas first thing in the morning, so you don't have not too much hassle, no excuses. Just 15 minutes every day, and that will make you feel better, super energized and confident within a matter of weeks. And over time, it will help you drop 15 pounds, depending on how much you have to lose. pretty sort of easily because we don't go on a diet either. The nutrition part of that program is very focused on nourishing, on thinking, what do I have to give my body for it to be, you know, to perform, to be energized, for me to be happy with my food. So there's no forbidden foods, which I think is really important. And before we even talk about what to eat, we practice how to eat to be really in contact with your body and what it needs, because that's something we all have lost. And that's why we tend to overeat, because we also have this onslaught of food 24/7. So if we can sort of turn from the outside towards the inside and find out, what does food actually do for me? How do I feel? How much do I need? Can I slow down? Can I sort of connect and know when I've had enough? Because that then is a skill that you can apply anywhere. You can go on vacation or eat in a restaurant.
You're not trying, you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you're working with your body and not against it. You're not trying to starve yourself. You're going to restrict foods. You just know what you need and you know when you've had enough. And then the whole thing comes, of course, packaged with a lot of support, because I think that's really crucial, especially for midlife women. So many of us feel like we're invisible. Nobody cares. We're irrelevant. And when you have a support system in place where someone actually is in your corner and cares, it can make a world of difference for just feeling so much better and more confident. And then the physical change will happen nearly as a side effect. So you don't, you know, it's not like you're going on a diet and we're starving ourselves into submission. Not at all. It's really all about building and nurturing and confidence. And many women come to me because they want to lose weight. And then after a few weeks, they say, oh my God, this is, you know, this is so much better. I feel so great. And they feel the strength and they feel this effect that it has on the body.
Is it available? Is it online or is it? Okay. So you have an exercise routine that you put online, or is it, how does that work?
I work exclusively online, and it's going to be your exercise routine, because that's one of the cornerstones of my approach, is that you need to start where you are at. So we are going to assess you, see how you move, how strong you are, how mobile you are. And then I'm going to build a exercise sequence that is challenging enough for you, but it's not going to be overwhelming or going to hurt you. So that's very customized, because that's the one point, especially in midlife, that we really have to be like totally focused in on. We get hurt and we don't want that.
No. Well, that's fabulous. I think I love that approach with the 15 minutes a day. I think that's so doable. And then you get more motivated as you see the results. So great idea. And tell us where we can find you and where we can learn more about your program.
Yes, you can go to my website, which is kimrahir.com. And on there, there's a free assessment that you can actually take to find out where how your physical status is. And it's not only physical, it's quite holistic, because the body is a whole. We live in an environment. So it's an assessment where you can sort of check out what your overall situation is when it comes to your health and your fitness. So you know what could be your next steps, because you find out exactly where you are. That's on my website. And then you can follow me on Facebook, Kim Rahir, with my name. I share my weightlifting adventures and tips and tricks and thoughts on what to do in midlife if you want to get stronger and leaner and just happier and more confident.
That's wonderful. That's excellent. So that's kimrahir.com. So that's RAHIR.com.
Yes.
Fantastic. Well, we'll have all this information on our show notes. So I'd encourage, I'm definitely going to check it out again. And I encourage our listeners to, if any of this has made any impression on you, which I'm sure it has, to please check him out. And that would be wonderful. And so thank you for all the wonderful tips and sharing your story. Maybe before we leave, any kind of last thoughts or any last words you had?
Yeah. Most of all, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation. I just want to tell every woman out there that it's never, never, ever too late. Because I've come back from like a very, very dark place. And no matter where you're at right now, you might feel it's too late, but it isn't. And give yourself the benefit of the doubt and just try something, because it really never is too late. You can start a fitness journey when you're 99 and still get better and feel better.
Absolutely. Cheers to that. Thank you so much. I appreciate all the information and good luck.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this incredibly inspiring journey of reinvention with Kim Rahier. Here are her key takeaways. Number one, muscle is very important for functional independence, metabolic health, and cardiovascular health, especially for women in midlife who lose about 8% of muscle every decade. Number two, start where you are at. You need to find out what is your physical status and reconnect your brain with your muscle, especially if you haven't exercised in a long time. Number three, resilience is more like a safety net that you knit for yourself, where you have various points of support. And when one breaks away, you still have all the knots that will help you bounce back and keep going. Don't rely on just one support in your health system. Have various points where you can fall back on. Number four, trying to eat healthy is the worst strategy. Make your health goals specific. And also let go of the big picture, which can scare you. Always focus on what you can do right now. Don't look so far ahead. The biggest takeaway from this episode is this: it's never too late to take charge of your health. Take small steps, start where you are, and celebrate all your little wins, and you will see how much better you feel. For today's Motivational Monday segment, let's focus on another amazing woman who defied health odds to not only survive, but thrive. Have you ever heard of Frida Kahlo? Frida is a Mexican artist, famous artist, who faced lifelong health challenges. At the age of 6, she contracted polio and overcame the virus, but had a limp in her left leg. At the age of 18, she had a bus accident, which left her with severe injuries, including a broken spine. In the following years, she played soccer, swam, and took up wrestling to help her recover. But art was the thing that helped her feel more engaged with the world during her recovery. Despite enduring chronic pain, Kahlo challenged her experiences into her artwork, becoming one of the most celebrated painters of the 20th century. If women such as Kim Rahier and Frida Kahlo can overcome such odds, it is incumbent upon us to take their examples and not give up, regardless of our age or circumstances. If you are finding it challenging to move forward, or if you're feeling like you're facing blocks and unsure of how to proceed, I have a wonderful energy blocks guide that can help you. You can download it in the show notes, and you will receive explanations on what the possible blocks are that you're facing and how to overcome them. Of course, you're also welcome to book a complimentary consultation with me to walk you through this guide, or just to talk about your particular challenges, as well as your hopes and your dreams. This is my passion and my reason for being, to help you achieve yours. Till next time, my friend, stay well and stay motivated.